If you would love to create a transformational and successful coaching business, but you don't know where to start or how to make this a full-time career, then my new certification program, Influential Coach, is for you. There is no other four-month live online mastermind like this. I'm going all in, guns blazing on this one with you to skyrocket your coaching career and personal brand online. You will learn the frameworks I personally use for rapid transformational coaching so you can support your clients to achieve their dreams no matter where they are in life. You will also learn how to authentically brand and market yourself as a coach so you can stand out from the rest and build a career of freedom and fulfillment. Spots are limited and this is an application-only program. So if you're serious about finally committing to building a successful career in transformational coaching, then head over to imjoelbrown.com/coach and apply today. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Addicted to Success podcast. I'm your host, Joel Brown, and I'm here today with Dr. Danielle Gervais-Harmon. She is a God girl, a philanthropist, a wife, a CEO of the multi seven-figure Inc. 5000 recognized business transformation company. She has also published a book called Move to Millions. She has an event coming up very soon called Move to Millions too. And she has a Move to Millions podcast. That's a lot of millions right there. And you know, we love Addicted to Success. So thanks a million for showing up today and sharing your wisdom.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here. I'm looking forward to what I know is going to be an amazing conversation. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun on your podcast. You invited me to speak on yours, and now you are here sharing your wisdom with our community. So I'd love to know, how can we move to millions? Let's dive into it. You can share your story along the way, but I'd love to know, how do we start doing that? Because the Addicted to Success audience, they're high achievers, they're ambitious, they're ready to run. How do we move to that space of millions?
Yeah. So the first thing is to make the decision that millions are not without your, not outside of your reach, and that it's not a lot. Yeah. Money tends to flow away from those who feel that there's a shortage of it. So if you hold a construct that millions is this massive number, it's going to be hard for you to attain it, right? When we look at the statistics around small business, there's approximately 33 million small businesses in the United States. And a small business right now is classified as having between or at least 1,500 employees or less and $40 million in revenue or less. So that's huge. Most of the businesses that we probably interact with are actually micro businesses, meaning they have less than 10 employees. Revenues can be, you know, run the gamut, but they have less than 10 employees. And when we look at those numbers, only 4.2% of the 33 million actually cross seven figures in a year. And because the vast majority, over 88% of all of those small businesses are actually micro businesses, and the statistics say that roughly 88% don't make $100,000 a year, there has to be something to the mindset and to why we're not making that money. So we've got to first decide that we are deserving of it. We're worthy of them, and remove the stigma that getting to them is going to mean more hard work, and that there are forces that want to keep us from millions. So I think that's the first step, is shifting our mindset. Once we make the mental decision, then the actions that we take will start to catch up. Now, we're going to assume that you have a clear strategy. You know, the problem you solve and for whom, you've got it packaged into a solution that you can deliver in a leveraged format at a price point that allows you to experience profitability. And it's positioned and promoted in a way that makes people want to sign up for it. So we're going to make that assumption. Once we know that we've got a clear strategy in place that we're leveraging, and we know how to have effective sales conversations, one-to-one, but ultimately one-to-many, it really just becomes a numbers game at that point. And so we are finessing our strategy until we get the predictability of the numbers we want to see. So $1 million a year is $83,333.33, right? We have our clients focus on getting to 100K months. If you're doing 100K months, that's a $1.2 million year at minimum. And you can get to 100K months without having to do a whole bunch of work and blood and sweat and tears if you're packaged and priced and positioned right. So beyond the mental capacity and fortitude that you need to have, we really get into the strategy and making sure that You serve an audience and you serve them to solve a problem that they've been unsuccessful at solving on their own. And you're showing up consistently in service to them from a marketing and messaging standpoint so that they see you, they can opt into your ecosystem and be taken through a process to become your paying client. And that is really just a matter of tweaking until we get the right formula so that, again, your results become predictable. But it doesn't have to be hard. Right. I do recommend often that you don't try to do it by yourself, that you do have a few key team members. I'm not an advocate for having this big, humongous team, but three carefully placed team members can make a big difference and really support you to be the CEO of a company that makes millions of dollars. And those three team members would be your executive assistant, someone who is performing the service, right? So a mini you, who can actually serve your clients so that you're not in the business, but able to work on the business and people are hiring your company and not hiring you. And then the third team member is typically either a person who's helping with marketing, if your EA doesn't have that skill set or can't be taught that, or a person that's helping with sales. Three carefully selected team members and yourself, you could have a $1 million company that serves you, that's profitable, and that allows you to experience the life that I believe that we were all born and created to live in accordance to what God says and desires for us.
You've been talking about making millions for a while, haven't you?
I have.
you just dropped the mic on like so many levels. I love it. Yeah, there was a lot in there that I think just already there's so much that we can just audit ourselves with and have a look at, okay, mm-hmm. Have I considered even just the three? Do I have three people altogether in my team that can pull the weight evenly in the most important mm-hmm. areas of business to be able to achieve their success? And I think one of the mistakes that we make, right? Robert Kiyosaki said this. He said, we go into school and then we get graded on everything like geography, mm-hmm. English, maths, but you might not be the best at some of those things.
Right.
But when you leave school and you get into entrepreneurship, it's sort of like you can go and hire your friend Timmy and your other friend Lisa that's good at science and whatever else. And if mm-hmm. they all did the work or took the exams, you'd have straight A's across the board. And that's what we can do with entrepreneurship. Right. So for you, what do you feel like you got to let go of that allowed for you to move to that level to make the 100K months and scale your first business or businesses to the millions, so that people that are listening right now, they're like, you know what? I do have a lot of the education system stuck in me mm-hmm. or limiting beliefs or money is the root of all evil, whatever the stories they tell themselves. What did you shift and let go of to level up?
Yeah, all of that. But probably the biggest thing was seeing how I saw myself in relation to money, right? When you've been an employee, you are trained, hoodwinked, and bamboozled into believing that you exchange your effort for a dollar, right? So we're all given an hourly wage, or if you have a salary, you break that salary down into 2,080 hours, because that's how many work hours there are in a year. And you drill down your brilliance and who you are and what you bring to that organization into a dollar amount that is typically really small. And then when I came out as an entrepreneur, so when I was in corporate America, I made $120,000 a year before my bonus when I left. I didn't start there. And so that was probably the equivalent to about $75 or $80 an hour. And so when I came out into entrepreneurship and I was first starting coaching, I charged $97 an hour because it sounded like a lot, Joel. Oh, it's like, man. Oh, I'm going to make $100. I don't have to take my clothes off. I don't have to swing on any poles. This is going to be great. But I forgot that when you're an employee, there are many things that you do not have to cover that your employer absorbs. Right. And so we have this 15.3% self-employment tax that eats into that $97. And then we have all these other things. And I was literally making way less than I did when I had a job. And so I had to shed the belief that I had to exchange time and work for money. That was one of the major things. And so I learned very early about value-based pricing and how to create packages that really blurred the lines on what my hourly rate might be, right? I think if we were to figure out my hourly rate today, it will be something like $5,000. That's what it would be based on what we charge. But you can't see that because of all of the value-based options that we put inside of our pricing. So that was a very early one. The second thing that I really had to shift is this belief that having $1 million was a lot of money. When I first set the goal, when I quit my job, so I spent 12 years in corporate America. I literally woke up one day in 2004 and said, this is my last day working for someone else without a plan, with no clue what I was going to do next. I was willing to bet on me and I was willing to bet on the God in me. And so I literally walked into my boss's office, handed in a letter of resignation, left there and began to ponder, what was I going to do when I grew up? While I was trying to figure that out, I started selling Mary Kay cosmetics. I ended up becoming an independent sales director and getting a pink Cadillac within 5 months from quitting my job. I did Mary Kay full-time for 2 years. And then I had a similar moment where I said, oh, you're still sitting behind someone else's desk. You've traded one desk for another. This is not what God called you to. And I decided to start Incredible One Enterprises. So when I, from the moment I started to started the business, I had a vision that it was going to be a $1 million company. And for me at that time, $1 million seemed like a lot of money. Mm. Well, anyone who's actually made $1 million will tell you it's not a lot of money.
Not that much. Yeah.
And so, yeah. So because I thought it was a lot of money, I also had worthiness and deserve level issues. I, you know, was born into Christianity and struggled through many of the limiting beliefs that impact religion instead of having an amazing relationship with God. I had religion, and religion is designed to keep you bound and in fear instead of experiencing the kairos and the fullness of God. Mm. And so all of that meant that I didn't need to have $1 million. Like, I think about that one scripture. I can't even tell you where it is. I think it's in Matthew. It is easier for a rich man to get into the eye of the needle than into heaven. Yeah. And I remember 1 Timothy 6, and, you know, for the love of money is the root of all evil. And I remember my dad calling rich people evil. And I'm like, I don't want to be evil. So that means I shouldn't be rich. Right. And as I grew, as I became an adult, as I began to really explore my own relationship with God, and I explored even religion and realized that Christianity is rooted in Catholicism. And Catholicism says your holiness is tied to your brokenness. It all started to make sense. And so I realized I needed to shed religion and I needed to establish relationship that allowed for the fullness of God and the wealth and the power to create the wealth that I was given before I was formed in my mother's womb to rest, rule, and abide inside of who I am so that it could show up in my life experience. And so that was probably the biggest of all the shifts. And as I leaned into those shifts and did my forgiveness work and learned the power of obedience and surrender, I literally walked into millions. It was a grace-filled walk. It wasn't hustle. It wasn't grind. It wasn't filled with a lot of identity crises. And that became the benchmark and the backdrop of the work that I get to do today. I believe that you can have a $1 million business without having to choose, right? You can love God, you can make millions, and you can do it with grace and ease instead of hustle and grind. It's the premise of all of my work because I lived it. So there's no theory in it. I did it the hard way, and I also did it the grace-filled way. And that has made a big difference in all that it is that I've done, and constantly reminding myself who I am, whose I am, what the word says about me, what I know to be true about me, and allowing God to be God in me, and thinking so big that only God can help to make some of the goals that I have happen has been an important part of our success as well.
So powerful. So powerful. I have a framework. It's very simple. It's just one of the many that I use in my coaching practice. It's called the four dimensions of excellence. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I came up with this because I realized after interviewing over 300 people, you know, top performing artists, celebrities, entrepreneurs, and so mm-hmm. on, I realized that every single one of them, when I would ask them the specific dimensions, how they played in it and what they did, every single one of them could answer off the top of their head like that. It's like they knew it so well. That's why they were operating at a high level. So the four dimensions are values, beliefs, mm-hmm. habits and skills. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you can always check in on this within yourself too. Check in. Okay. Which dimension am I lacking in? Where could I show up better, mm-hmm. improve, and so on? It's a great little model. I want to ask you those four dimensions to get a really deep understanding of how your mind operates and how you mm-hmm. mechanically operate in entrepreneurship as well. So when mm-hmm. it comes to values, the first dimension, what do you do to get back to your values? And what would you say that you value and prioritize as important in your life that's helped you to get to your making millions, but also impacting millions of lives too?
Yeah. So my core values include integrity, spirituality, mm-hmm. wealth, communication, and love. So for me, at the heart of everything that I do is about relating to people, and it's about showing up in a way that gives people a sense of safety and security in my presence. That's why integrity is so important. If I tell you I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it, because all we have is the word that we relay to someone else, right? And when people are reliant on us, depending on us to fall back and not show up for them, is an indication that we are not truthful people that can be trusted. And that's something that's very important to me. My spirituality is, it's a grounding principle. I am because God chose me. And I'm unapologetic about my faith because it allows me to be a light in the dark for many people and to show people how to be grounded in something that is greater than themselves, right? It keeps me at a level of humility. And when I define humility, I actually believe being humble is being confident, right? It's understanding, recognizing the gifts and talents that were placed on the inside of you and sharing them with others in a way that honors and edifies instead of downplays and dismisses. And so it allows me to really show up fully that way. Wealth is a core value because when you have, you can help others. So I'm a philanthropist. Like I said, at 10 years old, I wanted to be able to make a whole lot of money so I could help other people who didn't have a lot of money. And so being able to earn or to generate at a level that is surplus allows me to be able to serve and support other people. And that wouldn't be possible if I didn't understand the significance of that.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Okay. So you said core values. What about vocational values? What do you value when it comes to the doing-based things, the action-based things?
Yeah. So I would still say integrity. I would say consistency. Taking the actions and showing up is important to me as well.
Okay, cool. So when it comes to your beliefs, what are the major main beliefs that you hold in your mind? You could list maybe three of the top beliefs that you believe really fuels you, empowers you. You keep it at top of mind quite a lot, and that's what has driven mm-hmm. you with that confidence and the execution and everything you've done to stay in creation.
Yeah, I can do anything I put my mind to. Money will never be my problem, and that any space I inhabit is better because I'm there.
That's awesome. How did you come to even like every space is better because I'm there? How did you come to that? Was it just seeing as reference points in reality that so many people were having breakthroughs because they were working with you? Or was it more so an experience of like self-love practices? Or is it just mm-hmm. keeping your mindset on God? And that's the biggest fuel driver for that mm-hmm. particular belief. What do you think it is?
Yeah, it is really understanding the origin of my story, right? My birth. So I was born to drug addicted, turned crack addicted parents. My mom didn't even know she was carrying me. So she was an active addict. She went to the doctors complaining about something else and learned that she was in fact carrying me. Stopped cold immediately, you know, would have never been getting high if she knew she was pregnant. The doctors told her, and this was 1975, so there wasn't a lot of data on the effects of drug use on an unborn child. Like, women were still smoking in 1975 and pregnant, but they were beginning to have these warnings of there's going to be an effect on your fetus if you do these things. So the doctors had no idea, and they were just honest and said, it's likely that this child will be born and she may not get to experience life like most would experience life. So we just want you to be prepared for that. And my mom spoke against that. She was an ardent woman of faith, and she spoke against that. And I was born with no cognitive disabilities. I had health challenges. My immune system was compromised, but there was never anything cognitively wrong with me. And learning that honestly made me feel invincible. It made me feel like there was a purpose for my life, and that if I just stayed in purpose, I would literally shake the planet. And so I know it. And yes, I do have receipts. I have proof that it substantiates that I'm not just being this cocky woman having this conversation with you, but it is just, in fact, confidence, right? I believe that the way that I see myself is the way that God sees me. And so that is what I project out into the world. And I would be doing people a disservice to not show up fully, especially as a business coach, because often your clients have to borrow your confidence in order to say yes to themselves, in order to take the steps that they need to take in order to get out of their own way and to experience the result that you know is possible for them. So my confidence, it makes space for other people to step into their next level. And because of that, I really do honor it and honor myself for showing up that way.
I love this. It's interesting. You do get to a point where you're like, you know what? I got this in the bag, whether it's coaching, speaking, copywriting, sales, whatever it is, you just know that you're really good. You can start to get consistent results. And there is a sort of point, isn't it, where you pass the line and then you start to look at your clients and go, you have no idea what's possible. Like, you know that this is actually attainable, right? It's a really cool shift that starts to happen in you. Okay, so values and beliefs you've covered. Now let's look at habits. What are your key driving habits that have got you to this level of success? What do you do on a daily basis that if you left it out, that you would start to slip, you'd start to backslide into old you? Like, what would it be?
Yeah, so first would be time in prayer and gratitude. Like, that's essential. My eyes pop open and I am, you know, I am thanking God, right? I'm finding a reason to just validate that Him choosing me was the best decision that He ever made. And then spending time in the Bible, really just reinforcing the promises that have been made to me and helping me to navigate how I'm supposed to live. So that's always first and foremost. Second is moving my body. I get up every single day and I get on the treadmill for 30 minutes. During my treadmill time, what I do varies. Sometimes I'm listening to a podcast or watching a podcast. Sometimes I'm listening to an audiobook. Sometimes I am praying, and praying in my spiritual language to the Father, uttering what who knows what, but exactly what my spirit needs in that particular moment to be able to fortify myself and those that I serve. And then the third thing is when I actually get into my office, my assistant makes my calendar for the day. I review what's on my calendar for the day, and I plug in the pockets of self-care and what I'm going to do to make sure that I make it through the day in a way that really does honor me and my vessel, making sure I'm drinking enough water, that I get up and walk periodically throughout the course of the day. And I always tend to myself before I jump in, right? So I don't take a meeting before 11 o'clock. So I usually get to my office between like 9:45 and 10. I have that hour to kind of lean into my work day, and then I'll take a meeting starting at 11. And that has really served me extremely well into making sure that I can always be the version of myself that needs to show up, whether that's the CEO, whether that's the business coach, whether that's the copywriter, or, you know, whomever I need to be in that particular moment inside of the work that I do.
All right. And then we have the last dimension, skills. You can either hire or acquire skills, right? What would you say are the main set of skills that you've hired or acquired within your entrepreneurship practice that you feel has really helped you get to multi millions?
Yeah, this is a good question. So acquired skills, the skill of writing. So I studied English business and technical writing in college. So I am our copywriter. There are many things that I don't do in the day-to-day of my organization, but my ability to put words on paper that gets people to take actions is unparalleled, unprecedented. So I do write. So that's one of the skills that I continue to hone and continue to leverage in order to do what it is that we do every single day. Another skill that I've acquired, part of it, I think, is just gifting. And then part of it has been the honing of it, is high-level vision and strategy to back into the vision. So I can take you to the mountaintop, and then I can help you to build the roadmap to get there. So, and that is unique because you either have typically one or the other, right? Your big picture vision or your tactical steps and strategy. And so being able to have both of them through schooling, through, like I said, some of it's gifts, some of it's schooling, but really understanding the need to be able to do both of those together. And then the third skill is completely natural, and that's my ability to orate. I'm a bad girl with a microphone.
I can tell. And that's really helpful when you run your events too, to be able to speak mm-hmm. powerfully from stage. I do believe that everyone has a story. The question is, mm-hmm. are you able to find the complexities of it, simplify it, really bring it down into principles that are learnable, teachable, mm-hmm. and transfer that on to others so they're inspired too. And you do a great job at that from what I've experienced so far. So
thank you.
Awesome stuff.
Thank you so much.
All right. So that's all the Wonder Woman, you know, superhuman stuff you got going on. What's your kryptonite?
Yeah. What is my kryptonite? That's a great question. If you would have asked me this question 5 years ago, it would probably be different even than what it is today, because I'm sitting in a space today where very few things worry me. Like, I don't spend a lot of time in fear. I also have shifted the way that I see fear. I now see fear as an indication that my next level is present. I do still have a little temper, though. I think that's really my kryptonite. And I think it's because I am big picture visionary and I want everything that I want in the moment that I tell you I want it. And so that impatience can sometimes set a sister off. So that's probably the biggest one. The second is people who operate out of integrity. If you tell me you're going to do something and you don't do it, I say often, Joel, I'm on the cross with Velcro. I love the Lord. I do. But there are times I need to Velcro myself down. Yeah. And be human and then put myself back up there. Yeah. People who don't operate in integrity, it burns my biscuits. It really does take me to a place that I don't like to be often. So I would definitely say those are my kryptonite.
Yeah. I often say, if I could just be 1% of Jesus, we'd be doing well. Like, what a high standard to be held to. Hey, I think that's why some people just really don't like walking with the Lord, because it's like such a high standard to live by.
Yeah.
But it's for our, you know, the best of our potential that we could step into. So yeah, I love it. I love that you have this worldview that is really supportive for you to tap into the greatness that God's planted within you and also share that mm-hmm. with others. You've got definitely giftings. And at the same time, I can tell you've worked really hard and really smart to be able to build the empire that you have. So there are a lot of excuses out there. You know, you see a lot of culture, society right now, everyone's very sensitive to lots of different things. And mm-hmm. it's easy to fall into victimhood when it comes to, oh, well, this is just my situation or the economy or whatever comes up for people. What are mm-hmm. you noticing is like a big conversation right now that is very much driven by excuses that you like to knock on the head and say, hey, enough?
Oh, I love this question. There's probably two things that are popping in for me right now. The first one is, and I can't remember if I share this with you, so I'm going to give you context before I say what is driving me bananas or bonkers. My anointing is for money and wealth and my ability to see the pathways that someone takes in order to unlock what has already been earmarked and reserved for them is uncanny. It is precise. And what burns my biscuits is when people make excuses as to why they can't do what is required to get there. Often people associate more money with more problems, right? We all sing P. Diddy and Biggie song, you know, we all get ourselves all caught up in that. And it becomes a belief that flowers our ability to take action. So that's one of the things that really does set me off, the excuse that people make, right? And then I think the second thing, I know the second thing that really sets me off is that people who don't even try, that are closed off. They say they want something different. And when they're offered a suggestion or advice in order to produce what it is that they say that they want, that won't work for me. They just close themselves off for it because they think that they know better than the advice that they're seeking. I can do a lot with a person who has an attitude and a mindset that they may be brilliant and amazing, but they don't know everything. And they are in the seat of student when they are interacting with me. I can do a whole lot with that. But when a person shows up in that, I already know that, or I already heard that before energy, it really does. It taints the experience for me, because I'm like, I can't work with you if you think you know it all. And if you already knew it, if you could do it by yourself, it would already be done. So because it's not done, it's likely that you cannot do it in and of your own strength. And so maybe sometimes the strength is God, right? Allowing God to show up and show out in it. And sometimes it's allowing the one he sent to show up and do it. And in that particular case, it might be me. So those are the two things that really burn my biscuits and frustrate me when people start making excuses.
Yeah, there's this arrogance, right? I already know all the answers. It's not going to work. Yeah, I often say to people, I'm here to support your potential, not your excuses.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Right?
And I can't want this more than you do. We could want it just exactly. as much, but you've got to want it even more or just as much as me in order for this thing to work, for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, if you fight for your excuses, you get to keep them.
I like that.
I'm okay with that. Like, if you think that that's the answer, okay, that's cool.
Yeah. It's like, why are you fighting so hard for that excuse? Yeah, it keeps us warm and safe, right? But mm-hmm. does it really? Because I think the biggest risk is not stepping out and actually living out that purpose. Because Absolutely. All you need to do is set your goal and actually hit it and realize, oh my gosh, I'm a creator. I was created by my creator mm-hmm. to create. How awesome yeah. is this? You almost get, well, we call it addicted to success. You get addicted to being able to create and expand more and impact more.
Yeah, absolutely.
What can we expect from your events? Because I know you got an event coming up in May, right? Mm-hmm. Which is mm-hmm. really pretty soon. So if you're listening to this mm-hmm. right now, make sure you go and check it out. Where do we go to hear more about your event?
MoveToMillionsEvent.com.
Okay, cool. So we go there, we grab the ticket. Where is it?
It's in Herndon, Virginia, which is just outside of Washington, D.C. So really easy to get to. The hotel is like minutes away from the Dulles Airport, so you can literally fly in right there. Our event is a mindset shift, spiritual alignment, and wealth activation incubator for entrepreneurs and small business owners who are millions-minded. They want to be the first or the next in their family to truly position themselves to make, move, and leave millions. And over the course of the 3 days, we get into the principles, the assets, and the legacy that is aligned with having access to millions of dollars. So we radically dismantle the money blocks and the money beliefs that are keeping them from the millions flowing in. We reinforce the strategy that they're using in order to do their part in the creation of the millions to flow in. And then we solidify the legacy moves that they're going to make as this money comes in so that they can build generational wealth for future generations. Most of the people that we spend time with in our live events, they are the first. They're going to be the first $1 million business and millionaire in their family. And so they come to the table with a level of excitement and sometimes even trepidation about what it's going to be like to have that amount of money in their life experience. And so we spend the time really cementing that they are worthy and they deserve it, and opening up the capacity for it to come in and to come in easily. It's like nothing you've ever experienced. My events have been called business church. The Holy Spirit is definitely there. It's not churchy and religious, although people call it business church, I think, because that's the only way they can really quantify it. It is a safe, sacred, and aligned space for you to connect with who you were created to be in such a way that it shows up fully in your life and in your business to the tune of millions. And it is, I tell people to pack a helmet and shoulder pads, because you aren't even ready. You think you're ready because you got a ticket, but what you get to experience when you get there is truly next level. The only scripture I can think of that really does it justice is 1 Corinthians 2:9. Your eyes haven't seen, your ears haven't heard, neither has it entered into the heart of man that which God has for you, because he loves you. And so over 3 days, we're going to edify and plant and support and nurture the seeds that have already been established so that you walk out there completely different than you came in. The only thing that is the same when you leave is your name and the name of your business. But we do also have people who decide to change their company name in the room.
Good. I'm sure they get a lot of really great feedback too. So we have a lot of people that are listening on the Addicted to Success podcast that may have flirted with the idea of, or maybe they took part in it before, but they want to go to another level with it. In the areas of speaking, coaching, and publishing a book, if you could share just one principle takeaway for each one, just in a nutshell, it doesn't have to be long or anything like that, but just, okay, let's start with speaking. What advice would you give to somebody that wants to start getting up on stages or build a speaking career?
Yeah, definitely hone the gift, because 87% of your success to earn financially is going to be tied to your public speaking skills. And speaking is the number one lead generator and sales tool on the planet. So if you can speak well, you can make money well. So that's what I would say about speaking. For coaching, I believe that coaching is really the skill set of unearthing in a person something that is already there, right? Coaches are really not people who are supposed to tell you what to do in personal development. They're supposed to guide you to the results. So also understand the distinction of when you're being a coach and when you're being a consultant. I spend the majority of my time as a consultant, not at a coach. At our live events, I'm a coach because I'm unearthing. I'm digging up the stuff. I'm helping them to find the answer for themselves. But in my work with our clients, we're primarily consulting. We're taking a look at what they've done and tweaking it so it can produce a greater result. The skill of coaching, I believe that coaches tell you what you don't want to see and show you what you don't want to hear. Also, so that you can become who God created you to be. So it's an amazing skill set to have. So learn it and adopt it in your work, regardless of if that's the primary medium that you serve clients in. And then, what was the last one?
Publishing a book.
Oh, publishing a book. Yeah.
You could be writing and publishing a book, because they're two different modes, right?
Yeah, they are two different things. Once you have proven your framework or methodology, you definitely want to put it in a book. A book is an expensive business card. Even if you get traditionally published, what the publishers are doing for authors these days is less and less. You're not getting a huge marketing budget. You're like, they're expecting you, when you write that book proposal, to tell them how you're going to sell your book with their imprint. So it's an expensive business card, but it will open doors like nobody's business. It will create opportunities if you learn how to leverage it. I've written 7 books total, and I've been in a couple of anthologies, but from my own pen, 7 books. This last book, Move to Millions, is the book I was born to write. The other books I wrote simply because I was getting on stages and I wanted to have a continuing education learning tool for the audience. But this particular book is really my life's work. It's our framework and methodology that we've used and perfected over the last 13 years and has allowed us to help 1,500 clients grow their businesses from 50 to 200%, a good 20% of them crossing the $1 million mark. So it's essential if you truly desire to thought lead, and speaking, coaching, and publishing, writing and publishing is part of the thought leadership paradigm, then having a book is going to be essential. And even though there are a lot of books out there, something crazy like maybe 32 million copies, the world needs your book.
Yes. I mean, God chose to go through a book too, didn't he? Bible.
Yes, he did.
Basic instructions before leaving earth.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I like what you said, having a framework. It's like an instruction manual. It's not just a book with fluffy stuff. I think there are so many books out there too, where after a while, I got sick of going to a bookstore, flipping through someone's book and going, oh my gosh, like how many times you got to hear the same thing in every single book? When I come across a book with a framework where I can tell, hey, this has been battle tested on the business landscape and in life, I pay attention. So I like that you defined it by saying framework, put it into a book. That's great. Because you can run events from that. You can like
develop everything. It's the backdrop of your million or even billion dollar company.
Ooh.
Just from that framework, the amount of things you said earlier, I love how everything is streamlined to move to millions, right? We did that on purpose, right? So I've got several frameworks and methodology. They're all based on that primary move to millions method. So from the move to millions method, we have the make millions move method. We have the sell millions method. We have the lead millions method. We have all of these other frameworks that touch the other areas of life, all based on that first construct. We can build coaching programs. We can build courses. We can do live events. We can do webinars. We can do everything based on that framework. Each step in the framework is its own system that produces a whole nother set of steps that we can leverage in order to make more results happen for the people that we serve. So it's a very calculated strategy to think about the work you do in that way, because a framework should predict results and success for those that you serve. So you're also able to lend to them an element of certainty if they implement the steps that are in your framework, because you've proven that it works, that they will get the result that they are seeking based on your framework.
It's like a multiverse of making millions. I love
it. It is.
You got layers to this. That's cool. What are you seeing as working on social media right now? Because I think a lot of people are getting frustrated. They're noticing the algorithms are not as generous as they used to be. You guys noticing with your business certain things that are working better? Do you have any sort of frame of mind that you hold when it comes to creating content or selling over social media or enrolling people into courses or events or masterclasses?
Yeah.
What's your view on all this?
Yeah, so social media is necessary. There was probably a point in time, even as social media was heightening, that you could get away without being present on it. But a lot of people, when they hear about you, the first place they're going is to your Instagram. Right? They're assessing the level of clout you have based on the number of followers you have, right? So you have to have a presence on all of them. I find the most important thing to do is to be consistent. There are ways on each platform is different on how to trick the algorithm. For instance, on Facebook, you make a post that is like a cute baby, it's my anniversary, it's my birthday. You make a post like that that gets everybody who's your friend to come and comment, congratulations, you look amazing, whatever. You do a post like that, and immediately following that, you do a post that you want them to do, take an action on, because then more people will see that post because they just activated with your account, right? I think that social media in and of itself, we have to remember that it is only one marketing stream, and organic use of social media is not going to produce a result unless you are consistent. So you have to show up, and or someone on your team has to show up. Scheduling your posts do not work as favorably in the algorithm as posting it individually. So you have to know that. Even if you have a social media content calendar where every single post is already laid out, I recommend that you don't schedule them, that someone goes in and manually on the day it's to be released at whatever time and post it, because it's going to be more favorable to the algorithm. But I think the biggest thing of all is remember that you don't own social media. So don't put all your eggs in the social media basket. We recently had, this is the second time that I'm aware of where the platforms have gone down. Facebook and Instagram one day, LinkedIn the next. And if your life is on LinkedIn or your life is on Facebook or on Instagram, and the way you make your money is on Facebook or on Instagram, and they go down, what do? You're out of business. So make sure that if you are using those platforms, you are still getting people to your own email list, because then you can market to them into perpetuity or when they unsubscribe, whichever comes first. So don't rely on having however many people in a Facebook group somewhere. Make sure every person in that Facebook group is also on your email list. So provide them with something from your group that when they click on it, they enter their information and now they're on your list. They're in your database. Because then that way, when a Facebook or Instagram goes down, you don't have to miss a beat. You just send an email. And honestly, anything you post on social media, you should probably be sending in an email anyway. And people have to get comfortable with marketing every day they want to make money. So the people who are subscribed to your list, if they unsubscribe, they weren't going to buy from you anyway. So let them go. But the other people want to hear from you frequently. So communicate with them frequently. It's a relationship like any other. If you are in a relationship and you're not talking to your mate every single day, you're probably not going to stay in a relationship. So think about it that way.
Great advice. I remember probably about 8 years ago, we had an email list of over 120,000 people. And I didn't do much with it. I was young. I was dumb. I just didn't understand the importance of what I had at the time. And it's one of my regrets was that I didn't email them enough, you know? And I think some people get all worried. Oh, if I email four times a week, it's too much. I'm bombarding them. I truly believe now with the different mindset that if you truly, truly believe in the impact that your product can make, your course, your event, like you, if you believe it, you'll scream it from the mountaintops multiple times, right? It's almost like someone said to me, oh, it's like finding the elixir of life, right? It's like finding the serum that gives you, you know, eternal life. Like we believe in the gospel, you and I, so we share it. Yeah. It's like, hey, this is life-giving. It's an eternal game. It's infinite. So I love that. And I love that you're encouraging people to bring them into your multiverse, your ecosystem, and saying, don't just play on social where a lot can be dictated. Come in and hang out with them and nurture them. The thing that bugs me, you know, because you talked about integrity, is when I see people buying all these followers or buying all these likes, you know, they'll put up a post and like 1 minute later they have 10,000 likes and you can see all these people are like bots. It's just like, are you serious? You're destroying your metrics now. You have no understanding of like who's actually interacting with your content. So what are you seeing that people are doing as big mistakes, like something like that online when it comes to either copywriting or selling or promoting their events or their masterclasses? What are you seeing?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest thing that I see is that there's a lot of people who have bought into the AI revolution and they've turned their copywriting over to AI. And don't get me wrong, I think there is a time and a place for AI and you can even use AI to get you started. So even if AI starts the process, I would say 80, 85% can be AI, but you need to come in and do that last 15 to 20% so that you rehumanize it because there's no emotion in what AI is presenting. And your copy is going to sound just like everybody else's copy. Everybody else who puts that same exact prompt in to ChatGPT is all going to spit out the same exact thing. And then you're going to be trying to figure out why people aren't clicking and they're not converting anymore because you've lost your uniqueness, and consumers are programmed to notice what is different. If you sound like everyone else, then they're going to assume you are like everyone else and they're not going to move in your direction to solve their problem. So I would say, again, if you use it as a starting point, not a finalization, and make sure that you go back. I had one of my clients sent me a text message and she said, I sent this email out to my list and a lot of people opened, but nobody clicked. Can you take a look at it and tell me why? And so I read the email and I said, this was AI, wasn't it? She's like, yeah, I was in a rush. I just wanted to get something out. And I said, oh, I can tell. I was like, there's none of you in this email and it's boring. I wouldn't respond to it either. She's like, but so many people opened it. Yeah, because your subject line was something that they were interested in, but they got disappointed as soon as they started reading. So don't ever use AI as the 100% of whatever it is that you produce. And so she went back and, you know, redid it. And I was like, that's going to do much better. Let me know how it goes when you send that email out. So we want to use AI. We want to save time. We want to collapse time. But here's the thing. Don't do it at the risk of losing what makes you uniquely you. Your unique value proposition still needs to be present, because if not, you're just like everyone else, which means they're not going to take the next step with you.
Yeah. Wow. I love this. You got great examples that you can share with us. So thank you. We're about to wrap up. I got one quick question. And I just want to get your insight, because you're pretty dialed into what's going on in the business world. And economically as well, where do you think we're going? Like economically and with obviously this rise of AI, crypto is blowing up right now. People are getting used to digital dollars, digital words, digital everything. So what are your thoughts around all this?
Yeah, they're going to continue, right? Artificial intelligence. If you think back to the Jetsons, can we just go to the Jetsons? the cartoon back in the day, this was all predicted for us, right? There was a premonition, and not in a bad way, but there was an indication that this is where we were going. It's not going to stop. Robotics, artificial intelligence is going to continue. And over time, I do think that it will get better. Like, it will be more humanistic. Like, we, even though we're now just seeing ChatGPT, it was in a testing phase for way longer than it was out in the world, right? And so we have to keep that in mind. Cryptocurrency, digital dollars, again, it's going to continue. I mean, I'm not an economist, right? I don't play one on TV. It will continue, whether or not it overtakes gold, or anything like that, I can't tell you, right? I think when I think about my investment portfolio, I got a little bit of crypto. I haven't gone wild in it, but I got some. I'm like, listen, if this thing does hit, I want to be on the train, right? So I think that with everything that is coming, you want to make sure that you find tried and true experts to help you to understand them. What happened when AI came out is all of a sudden, all of these people decided to ride the bandwagon and used AI to make them an expert in AI so that they could capitalize on the emergence of AI. I'm not recommending that you do that. And, you know, as these things come out, go to people who are tried and true, that have results, that can demonstrate consistency over time with these modalities and can teach you what you need to know. I believe that you need to be aware of all of them. Whether you choose to actively operate and use them is a personal preference, but you need to have a working knowledge. I do not recommend that you turn anything over to anyone to manage for you without you having an understanding of it yourself, so that when you see the results that come from it, you can validate whether or not they are doing a good job managing or not. If you don't have a baseline, then you are subject to whatever they tell you to be true, and they could be lying to you. So in all things, get an understanding, as the Bible says, get an understanding of what you need. And then from that, make a determination how deep you want to go into it. That's what I would recommend.
That's wisdom right there. All right, Danielle, thank you so much. Guys, make sure you follow her on Instagram. Make sure you go to her event web address. Just say that one more time.
Move to Millions. You can actually just go to movetomillions.com, and from there you'll be able to click on all the things: my book, my planner, my podcast, my event, how to find me on social. Everything will be at movetomillions.com.
Amazing. Danielle, one last question. If you were to deliver your last 30-second speech to the world, what would that last 30 seconds sound like?
You are worthy. You do deserve it. Access to abundance is your birthright. I believe that the world is a better place with you in it and with you having access to millions. So go and make millions move.